Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
That is why I've asked Congress to prohibit extreme late-term abortion, because Republicans believe that every child is a sacred gift of God.
Theology's source and basis is the written word of God, the scriptures, which, as Jesus says, cannot be broken. In this sense, theology and Christian teaching is more real than geology or biology. Medical science will change tomorrow, but God's word will endure.
As a temporal and portable vessel housing the presence of the true God, Mary is now fulfilling the purpose of the Ark of the Covenant.
We are in the closest communion with God when we are baptized into Christ, when we are absolved of our sins by our pastor at the altar, and where we receive the body and blood of Christ.
Hi, I'm Jessica from Yardley, Pennsylvania. Moms in labor love listening to Issues, Etc. 10 hours in, start another podcast.
There's an idea out there that affects our politics, our social structure, how we educate our children, how we think about ourselves, how we think about history. The idea is that Western civilization is white civilization. Ironically, it's an opinion held by both those on the extreme right, so to speak, say white nationalists, and the people on the extreme left, the intersectionalists and the identity politics crowd. They both think that Western civilization is white civilization. Does that bear up under the scrutiny of real history? Is the history of Western civilization about whiteness? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, August the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about whether or not Western civilization is white civilization. Dr. Bradley Berzer, professor of history at Hillsdale College, will join us for the first hour or so of Issues Etc. We'll go through some listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line after that. Then we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. It's a simple game we like to play with our listeners. We play four sound bites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. You listen, and then after you have heard all four sound bites, you give us a call, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, where we have left space for you to vote for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We have one soundbite from Rebecca Curtis on the objectivity of truth, goodness, and beauty. Another from Denise Schick, what children of transgendered parents need. One from Dr. Robert Spencer, what President Trump should know about ISIS. And the fourth soundbite is from Dr. Tom Egger, talking about by faith, Sarah conceived. We'll play those for you in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Your vote will decide which will be soundbite of the week. Joining us to answer the question, is Western civilization white civilization? Dr. Bradley Berzer, he's Russell Amos Kirk Chair in American Studies and Professor of History at Hillsdale College. He's editor-at-large for The Imaginative Conservative and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Why It's Preposterous to Say That Western Civilization is About Whiteness. Dr. Berzer, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Thank you so much for having me, as always.
Before we talk about the alleged whiteness of Western civilization, make the case against the idea of race per se.
Yeah, you know, there are several of my colleagues could probably do this much better than I could. But the question of race is a really interesting one scientifically. It has only existed really since the discovery of the New World around 1492, and then the recognition that the New World was actually new. So once you had this encounter between really the Old West and the New West, what would happen between the Old World and the New World, there were a lot of questions that were asked that would be similar to ones that I think we would ask, not to sound corny, but these are the kinds of questions we would ask if we ever met an alien species. So a lot of questions were being asked about the American Indians, when they were first encountered, they were naked. And so in Western theology, of course, that meant they were either innocent or they were savage. So these were the kinds of questions that were being brought up because of the discovery of new peoples. And then it kind of bounced back into the Old West as well, especially with Africa and Asia and so forth. So there were a lot of questions that emerged. But as far as we know, those questions dealing specifically with skin color as race, with various peoples as race, really are only about 500 years old.
Where did the idea that Western civilization is white civilization come from?
You know, I think in a lot of different ways, it's come from a variety of different sources. So about 150 years ago, the word race itself, which had really meant a kind of people or a culture, what we would call culture or maybe ethnicity, that word started taking on a new meaning in large part because of Darwinian evolution. So people started talking about how do we think that maybe Africans evolved separately from Asians or Asians from Europeans, Caucasians. So there was a question or at least a change of race at that time. But we became kind of, I mean, I think as a Western people, we became somewhat obsessed with it. And so there was a lot of discussion, especially in the late 19th century and early 20th century, about degrees of whiteness. And you get these crazy color charts, even in school textbooks for children, where they'll break things down. So they'll kind of make a jag right across Central Europe. And anybody who is north of Central Europe is white enough, and anyone who's south, such as a Spaniard or an Italian, is not quite white enough. So you get these really bizarre gradations during the Progressive Era as people are talking about that. And so, you know, Todd, as I see it, we're kind of living at the end of the 150 years of this discussion right now. And I didn't think it could get any crazier, but I think it has gotten crazier in the last year or two.
For those who buy into this idea that Western civilization is white civilization, what is the social and political agenda?
Yeah, you know, I think there are probably a lot of people who believe that those of us who defend what Western civilization really are defending white civilization. I'm sure there are people out there who are trying to distort things. But we've essentially, since the 1960s, we have an entire, now two generations of young people who've been brought up on the idea of race, class, and gender, but especially race and gender, as being the critical distinctions of various peoples. And, you know, that is so counter. I realize, you know, we're on a religious show here, and it's just so counter to the idea of Christianity. And it's so counter to the idea of Judaism as well, that you could actually have a race of people. You know, in Judaism, you have a chosen people. And in Christianity, you have an openness to all people. But this idea of racism that's developed is really something radically profound, I think, and not in a good way by any means, but it's been very, very divisive. It always has been, but I think it's worse now than it ever has been before.
Why do people who buy into this mistaken idea of the whiteness of Western civilization sometimes reject Western civilization out of hand? They simply say, if it's Western, it's white, and therefore should be rejected.
I have to admit, Todd, I find that mentality almost impossible to understand. To me, that it's no different than a group of white guys sitting around talking about what's wrong with blacks. It's just, it's reverse racism, but it's still absolutely racism. So this idea that we have, or we can judge people by the standards of the color of their skin, it's taken on, I think, especially with the cultural left, or at least the very radical left right now, that's become very acceptable. And I was part of a group, and I don't want to make this too personal, but I was part of a group this last December that was asked to kind of imagine what society might look like 50 years from now and what successes we might be able to judge now from the perspective of 50 years hence. And it turned out, and I don't think this was intentional, but it turned out that the 16 people they asked to do this all happened to be either white males or white females who are professional historians. And I saw very respected scholars suddenly saying, oh, we can just throw this out. This is pure whiteness. It's a bizarre thing. I mean, you can imagine if we said the same thing, that is, if a white person said that about someone who was Asian or someone who was of African origin. It would be an outrage to the nth degree. And the fact that we're allowing this and no one is really calling it right now, I think is a very dangerous aspect of our culture.
Do those who critique Western civilization on the basis of its whiteness, do they inconsistently borrow on the capital of Western civilization to make their arguments or form their ideas?
Yeah, you know, I think they do. And I think it's a very fair question, Todd. It's a great question because, and here I'm going to sound a little bit bigoted, maybe not racist, but bigoted. I had a graduate school professor. I think he took this too far. He's passed away now. But one of my favorite professors used to say, yeah, if you don't have Aristotle, you'll never have logic. It doesn't matter who you are. And I mean, I think as much as my professor was exaggerating, and he was a very funny guy, I do think there's a point to that. And there's no doubt that within Western civilization, we've seen real developments based on the idea of logos, the idea of rationality, the idea of reason. And you have it in other cultures, certainly in Islamic culture, but of course that's taking it from Aristotle. You have it in cultures that are older than what we see with Aristotelian culture, like Confucianism, but it's not a consistent kind of cultural norm, for example, for the Chinese in the way that it is for the West. I think we've been very consistent, at least in our desire to get back to ideas of things like logic. And so when we see people making certain arguments about the West, they're quite often, even if they're using them poorly, they're quite often using Platonic and Aristotelian arguments. So there is a bit of an irony in that, certainly, that they're using the West to undermine the West.
Why do you cite Augustine as a good example of the racelessness of Western civilization?
Part of that just comes from, I consider myself an Augustinian, but I also like the idea because I teach at kind of a pan-Christian school, a very broadly Christian school, where we have a lot of Lutherans and a lot of Catholics and a lot of Calvinists. I like Augustine because from a Christian perspective, he's so representative of so many different groups. So Luther being an Augustinian monk, the idea that Augustine is a saint in the Catholic Church, that Calvin was an Augustinian, I like that. But he's also a nexus beyond that as well. He's a North African. We actually don't have a clue what he really looked like. We all have that famous Renaissance painting in our head where he looks very, very Italian and maybe a little bit whiter than he probably was. But we don't really know what he looks like. In college, I had the great blessing of doing one of my research papers on Black Catholicism, on Catholicism among Black Americans. And one of the things I found out immediately is that almost all Black Americans identified with St. Augustine. And that struck me. It's like, wow, you know, this is a guy I grew up with, but the images of him were always that Renaissance image. Here I walk into a Catholic church that's predominantly African American, and their St. Augustine looks very Ethiopian. And I thought that was fascinating. And of course, you realize very quickly how malleable these images can be. And it's not incorrect. We don't know what he looked like. And you know, if a predominantly Black culture wants to think of Augustine as Black, that's perfectly fine. If we're in the middle of central Germany and we want to think of him as kind of a proto-Lutheran looking somewhat like Martin Luther did, I think that's totally fine too. There's no real right or wrong on that, at least not one we can prove. So Augustine always strikes me as not only is he one of the greatest figures of Western civilization, but he's really an example where we could say, if you're trying to prove whiteness, you're not going to find it here, at least not definitely.
What are some other examples that disprove the whiteness of Western civilization?
Well, I think a lot would depend on how we're defining Western civilization, say from the Greeks forward. There's no doubt that there's always a look towards the Germans and the Celts. There are these racial groups as well. But you know, prior to the Islamic invasions, a lot of the Near East and a lot of North Africa was Christian and was considered a part of Western civilization. So really, obviously, all peoples expand in some way. But if you look at the history of the Islamic expansion, it really does cut off huge parts of the world, India, as well as Central Africa from Europe. And you start seeing more of a division after the Islamic invasion. Islam, by the way, too, is a really kind of, they're much like Jews and Christians, not just because they're monotheists, but it doesn't matter what color your skin is to be a good Muslim. And I think that is very much a kind of proper Western attitude as well, that I would say almost certainly comes out of the Western tradition, but it's also, I think, a part of monotheism as well.
We're answering the question, is Western civilization white civilization? Dr. Bradley Berzer is our guest, Russell Amos Kirk Chair in American Studies and Professor of History at Hillsdale College. On the other side of the break, could we cite Christianity, if only as a contributor to Western civilization, as another example against the idea that Western civilization is white civilization?
The West is the best. The West is the best.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com, churchmusicsolutions.com.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Bradley Berzer of Hillsdale College, answering the question, is Western civilization white civilization? The Issues Etc. book of the month for August is the Growing in Faith Bible Storybook. This is a book that is written, Bible stories are written at the level of about 8 years old to 10 years old, right when they're starting to read for themselves and getting into the stories of the Bible. Concordia Publishing House offers this for parents, grandparents, godparents. You can find out more about the Growing in Faith Bible Storybook at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and order one for a child that you know, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Berzer, before the break, you were citing some examples that speak against the notion that Western civilization is white civilization. Could we cite Christianity as such an example, if only as a contributor to Western civilization?
Yeah, for me, Todd, I would say absolutely. And I think it would take someone with real bigotry not to recognize Christianity as one of the single most important influences on Western civilization. Christianity is obviously larger than Western civilization, but it inherits a lot from Western civilization and gives a lot to it, even though I think we could probably, I think, definitively say the Hebrews originally were a very, you know, in the old-fashioned sense of the term, very Oriental, coming out of the Near East, but certainly migrating into the West and contributing much to the Western tradition. But Christianity is so clear in its debates, whether we're going back to the Council of Jerusalem around 50 AD, or you look at the later doctrines, Christianity is very specifically not about skin color. It's a universal thing, and everyone is invited. Everyone is potentially a member of Christianity. So any kind of exclusion that would be based on skin tone, I think, would be absurd. I know it happened, but to think about it theologically in the way that it was stated by St. Paul and by those at the Council of Jerusalem, one of my favorite, T.S. Eliot. Sorry, you probably weren't expecting that, Todd. T.S. Eliot just popped into my head. But one of my favorite moments, when T.S. Eliot was accused of being anti-Semitic, and he did make one or two comments he shouldn't have, but overall, he was a very just man. When T.S. Eliot was accused of being anti-Semitic, his response was, "If that's true, I've gravely sinned against my own religion, because my religion does not allow such bigotry." So obviously there have been Christians who have been bigoted, but it's not a part of their Christianity. It's something next to it and separate from it that they somehow were able to incorporate it, but it really should not be a part of our Christianity.
A few moments ago, you talked about the origin of the notion of race and in broad terms, but you also mentioned there in passing that it really kind of caught fire with the advent of Darwinian thinking. How did those two kind of fuel each other?
I'm not an expert on this, Todd, and I have one of my colleagues I've learned a lot from, a great colleague, Mark Kaltoff, has really done some very good work on issues of race and how this develops. My own perspective has come because I generally teach the American Revolution up through the American Civil War, so I'm very interested in looking at the way that racialism and racism started with slavery, or at least was extended through slavery. So my own perspective comes from that. But it's interesting, if you take a figure that I think we would all agree was very racist, someone like John C. Calhoun, if you look at him in 1820, before Darwin, he's really not able to explain why there are racial differences other than somehow God had willed that there would be different peoples. But by the time you get to 1850, and Darwin hasn't written yet, so when I say Darwinism, I mean broadly this movement towards evolution. Darwin was really synthesizing a lot in the 1850s. But in this movement towards Darwinism, you start seeing this argument that I think we would all agree is false. But people at the time were saying, look, we now have scientific backing. There's only one creation. There's monogenesis. But if there's evolution, then we can show that Africans evolved separately from Asians, and Asians evolved separately from Caucasians, and therefore there have to be these racial attributes that go with that evolution. So it's really difficult to look at any of the theories of the 19th century. And I think we could even say broadly, though this may sound politically loaded in 2019, but I think we could say broadly that most progressive theories in the 19th century, evolution being the prime example of progressivism, this idea that we're always moving towards something else, that is really deeply rooted and connected with these ideas of racism. It's impossible to separate, really, those two things, progressivism from racism, at least in the 19th century.
Why, in terms of just kind of that movement, especially in the American context, why is progressivism racially focused?
In essence, it almost has to be. Progressivism, from its very beginning, was always an anti-Christian philosophy because it's developed on this idea coming out of Hegel and Fichte and some other, you know, very profound thinkers. But their argument that was that history itself was always three forces. One force that exists as the kind of present system, a radical force that challenges the present system, and then a third force that develops out of the conflict between the old and the new. So all of progressive history is based on conflict and conflict resolution, whereas most of Christian understandings of history had always been based on, we give a little bit, we take a little bit, we all give something up, and we all gain from this. So there was a very different way of thinking about the common good, the res publica, the republican way of thinking, versus the greater good, that is, who benefits and who loses. So these are very different ways of thinking. And once we see that development of the progressive ideal, that is, of the old versus the new, it also then, it's tied into Darwinianism. It's tied into those theories of evolution. Theories of evolution harken back to progressivism. But progressivism then, at least, I would say fundamentally it's rooted to it, but there are also accidents of history. It becomes related to this idea, how do a people evolve? How do a people progress?
You said earlier that you think we are kind of engaged in the last chapter of this conversation about this, but it has not turned out the way that I think, well, I think there are some people who are happy with the way it's turning out, but,
sure.
but advocates for Western civilization are not only disappointed, but a little flustered at the fact that this conversation has turned to the absurd, at least in its kind of public form. I don't know what it's like in academia, but what is being proposed
It's even more absurd.
So
I'm sorry, Todd.
That's all right. I'm just curious as to how you think this resolves itself, because we are now in a time when both the radical left and the radical right, and I speak there about kind of white nationalism, are promoting the same ideas to different ends.
Yes, and isn't that the craziest thing? I mean, it really does reveal a lot when both extremes are sounding exactly like one another, but with the opposite language, which is deeply disturbing. And it shows just how incredibly racialist we've become, that we're so focused on that issue that we can't think past it. So, Todd, I'm 51, and when I was in college, this was in the late 80s. I graduated in 1990. You know, when I was in college, one of the great debates was not whether we would have a canon of great books, but who was in the canon of great books. And so you had a lot of really radical feminists and some radical blacks who were arguing at the time, you know, all we need to do is be more inclusive. We'll include this author, and we'll make sure that it's not just this or that. And now we don't even see that debate. Now what's, I think, insane is that we're seeing people just basically saying, oh, you study great books. That's nothing but the history of dead white males. And that language has been around for a while, but to see it become so predominant, this is where I fear that we are really at the end of the fruits of these people who have been. Let me back up just a moment, Todd. One of the things that conservatives did extremely well in the 1940s and 50s, in large part through great books programs, but others as well, was that they really challenged the culture and didn't think that much about politics. Not that politics is unimportant, it's very important. But if you look at many of the great conservative thinkers, Leo Strauss or Russell Kirk or Robert Nisbet, these people who were major figures in the 40s and 50s, they were advocating cultural change. Lo and behold, the new left in the 1960s rejected their parents' idea, the old left, that they should go into politics. And you get people like Tom Hayden, who does, or Jane Fonda, who do go into politics, but they also recognize that it's really important to go into academia and to go into the grade schools, to go into high schools, and they do. And so we're at this point now, Todd, where we have had roughly two very long generations of teachers out of the new left teaching that society is based on these divisions of gender and class. And so it shouldn't be totally shocking that we see 18-year-olds on Twitter just proclaiming everybody else being racist, because that's what they've grown up on. The hard thing is, of course, for those of us who don't believe in it, we have to get things back on the right track. And here, I probably will sound a little bit biased, but I think the truths that were spoken at the Council of Jerusalem and Paul spoke in Galatians, that it's not male or female, it's not bond or free, right? It's something beyond that. Those, to me, are timeless truths, whereas the kinds of things we're focusing on, these ideas that it's skin color, these are temporary things. We'll get past it. There may be violence, there may be some more upheaval, but I think we'll get past it. I think we'll get back to Martin Luther King. I think we'll get back to his very traditional idea that it's the content of our character, not the color of our skin, that matters. He nailed it. He really nailed it. And those are the kinds of things that I think are timeless.
Historically, Martin Luther King and the entire civil rights movement, of which he was both leader and kind of product, is just in our rearview mirror. We just passed it, historically speaking. But we have, as a society, explicitly rejected the very things that King was fighting for while holding him up as an icon for our future. How you can't have this kind of cognitive dissonance long in a society until insanity ensues.
Yeah, I agree completely. And something's got to give there. And I hope it's peaceful, but you look at what's going on with Antifa and some of the other larger cities, especially on the West Coast. I mean, we're getting close to a breaking point. What's interesting to me is when you look at a place like Portland, which is very, very, very white, you know, it's interesting that Antifa is very, very white as well, at least from what you can tell by what they're wearing. But yeah, I mean, we're definitely, there's some straining points in American society right now. Interestingly enough, outside of social media, they don't seem to be racial. There were a few years ago, right, when we looked at some of the things going on in St. Louis and elsewhere. But in some ways, that's subsided. And even the kinds of things we were seeing 2 years ago with police against black suspects has kind of subsided. Now, that doesn't mean something couldn't break out today, but yeah, that does seem to have quieted down a little bit. So it'll be fascinating to see where we go from here, Todd.
How does this progressive racialism, as you call it, how does it distort our view of history?
Well, I think that the hardest thing is, and I take this from a lot of people I admire, like Christopher Dawson and others who were arguing this during the 20th century. I think the greatest thing that we see, whether it's left-right or black-white, I mean, we're seeing humans being divided against humans, and that's insane. From any logical standpoint, it's absolutely insane that the human race does not get along. And obviously we don't, but we're always trying to find these divisions. And that's, you know, we've got to work out a way, and I'm no prophet, but we've got to work out a way where we can get past these things and we can stop teaching history as us versus them, or at least if it isn't us versus them, we get the right story. It's who really is controlling this and who isn't. But history's very rarely that simple. There are usually so many complicating factors going on, but we're now teaching it as, I almost said comic book history, but I actually think comic books have more subtlety than most history does. So we're in an unfortunate time.
Dr. Bradley Berzer is our guest, professor of history at Hillsdale College. He's written a column for The Federalist titled, Why It's Preposterous to Say That Western Civilization is About Whiteness. We're answering the question whether Western civilization is white civilization. When we come back, does he fear for the end of history teaching?
The church's music from the second century. The 6th century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd. What have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Truth, beauty, and goodness. Beauty is determined by the other two. We probably all know people who are physically beautiful but lack an inner beauty that is pretty significant to goodness and the truth.
We have safe places for anybody that's coming out in school, but what about a safe place for a child to go when their father, their mother, whoever is transitioning, and they're going through this challenging time, a place where they will not be judged for having their own feelings?
The Islamic State is just what it says it is. It's the Islamic State. And that is the core of its appeal to many Muslims worldwide, that they believe that it is the legitimate Islamic government.
It's purely God's doing. It's purely passive. Perhaps this is the best illustration of faith in the whole list, that it's by faith that she conceives.
An hour from now, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We'll play those four soundbites for you in their entirety. After you've heard them, you will give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC, or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC, and cast your vote for one of them to be soundbite of the week. In the meantime, we're answering the question, is Western civilization white civilization? Dr. Bradley Berzer of Hillsdale College is our guest. Dr. Berzer, you teach history. That's how you make your living. Do you fear that if this trend toward equating Western civilization with white civilization and therefore rejecting it continues, especially in academia, that they will go beyond simply teaching alternate history and reject history as too white and too Western?
You know, and it's coming to that, Todd. I mean, they don't say it. Very few people say we're getting rid of our history department. And of course, at Hillsdale, we've got 14 full-time faculty. We're an unusual place. But yeah, at other places, especially at large state schools, you know, they don't have to kill history. All they have to do is emphasize other things and promote other things. And certainly, it's a problem. I think it's a problem everywhere, and especially, and it's not just history, it's all the liberal arts. All of the liberal arts are getting squeezed out, and partly because there's so much pressure economically to go and get an education that prepares you for a job. But there's no doubt that a lot of these arguments, you can imagine someplace that maybe is, I could see it happening on both the left and the right, maybe a left-wing place, a state that's predominantly left-wing, could say, look, this isn't the way we want to teach it. This is not what we need to emphasize. We're going to focus on other things. I could also see a lot of conservatives just saying, we're going to stop funding this university program because you people are crazy and we control the board. And that's what we're going to. So, yes, absolutely, Todd. It's a great danger on both sides, and neither side is immune.
How do you think, in particular, the progressive racialism is related to current identity politics and intersectionality?
So at the very end of the 19th century, and I guess we can name names, but in America in particular, anybody who was not a part of the kind of old white and really Anglo-Saxon Celtic Protestant, and by Protestant, I'm not talking Lutheran here, I'm talking mainstream Protestant. There was really a movement that anybody who was coming into the U.S. at this point, a massive anti-immigrant wave at the time that we're having millions of immigrants a year coming into the United States. So roughly from about 1882 up until about 1921, there's what we would call generally a nativist reaction. That is, the old white classes are really concerned about Catholics and Lutherans. They're concerned about Jews. They're concerned about Orthodox coming in, Greeks, Italians. They're worried about these people coming in and changing the culture. And my family was certainly on both sides. My family was a part of that in the 1870s and 1880s, the part of they were the immigrants coming in. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of your listeners were as well, their families. And so there was a real nativist reaction. So this is why I was saying, in large part, you can say theoretically, racism and progressivism can identify with each other, but accidentally, that is just by the circumstances of history, as the progressive movement was arising in America, it also was happening at a time of extreme racism in America, generally probably what we would call, it was more of a religious struggle and an ethnic struggle than it was a racial struggle, but it got caught up in those racial elements as well. And there are lots of books coming out, prominent books by people who are in the Teddy Roosevelt or the Woodrow Wilson administration that are actually blatantly saying, You don't want too many Swedes in your community. Swedes are unattractive. They have no imagination. They're stocky. They're not the kind of people you want in your bloodline. Or, you know, you can imagine what they would say about Sicilians. You don't want Sicilians in your neighborhood. These are people who will stab you in the back over a game of cards. Yeah, I'm actually getting close to quoting some of these things, even though I'm not next to my sources right now, Todd. But these are the kinds of things they were saying. You know, you don't want Poles in your neighborhood. They're priest-ridden, like cockroaches infesting. So they would go through and they would list all of these various groups, the very people who were coming in at that time. And they would say, you don't want that. And they would turn around and they would say, we want kind of 100% Americanism. And what they meant by that was essentially, you would have to be of English or Celtic origin. And of course, only some of the Celts are right. You don't want the Catholic ones. So you have to be of that, and you have to be of the old Protestant stock. Everybody else is untrustworthy. So our progressivism, Woodrow Wilson, talking about yanking the hyphen out of hyphenated Americans, you know, getting us into World War I to Americanize everybody here. A large part of that was progressive, but it also had to deal with these various racial, ethnic, and religious bigotries that were going on too at the time.
So how do we go about correcting the idea that Western civilization is white civilization, given how entrenched it has become in education, the media, pop culture?
Sure. You know, because you and I are talking, Todd, and because I know your background, I've emphasized some of the Christian element. But if I went out into a broader audience, I would emphasize the Greek element. You know, one of the things that never ceases to astound me, and I take this from other thinkers, William McNeill talked about this in his World History. Robert Nisbet talked about this in his own sociological works, historical sociological works. You go back and there's this weird moment around 510 BC where you actually have this massive leap in civilization all across the old world. So it's happening in China, it's happening in India, it's happening in Greece as well, specifically on the Turkish coast at a little town called Miletus. But right around 510, you get the development of what we would call philosophy rather than ethics. So ethics had always been in-group. If you are a member of this Greek community, you don't harm another person in the Greek community. You don't rape, you don't murder, you don't steal. But if it's someone in the village next to you that's not in your village, maybe that's possible, right? And so ethics says you don't hurt your neighbor, but philosophy develops in Confucianism, it develops in Buddhism, at least in these proto forms of it. It develops in Greek philosophy that basically we also treat our neighbor the same way that we treat the person who's living next door to us. By neighbor, I mean the next community over, or three communities over, or country over. And so ethics become universalized in the great civilizations of the time. It's really, it's one of the most important leaps in civilization itself. And when you look at the very first philosophical questions being asked by the Greeks, people like Heraclitus and Thales and these other great thinkers around 500 BC, they're all asking, what makes us human? Not what makes us Greek, not what makes us Chinese, not what makes us Hindu, not what makes us Indian, but what makes us human. And our records indicate that those people at Miletus in Greece were asking these questions in a more difficult and more sustained way than they even were in India or China at the time. So from the very origins of Western civilization, we've been trying to find these universal questions, trying to figure out what makes us all alike. And again, Nisbet has these wonderful arguments on historical bigotry, where he says, if you go back and you read the Iliad, you read the Odyssey, you read the Aeneid, there are no racial arguments in them because nobody thought that way. They may say, oh, look at the dark-skinned Ethiopian, but it had nothing to do with race. It simply was a visual truth that this person was lighter or darker. There was nothing beyond it other than our visual, our sight shows us this. So it had nothing to do with their character at all. And it's not really up until the discovery of the New World that we start seeing those kinds of things being changed, where we say, look, they're red-skinned, or they're yellow-skinned, or they're black-skinned, or they're white-skinned. and therefore they must believe this or they must think that. So that's I would call it a devolution in culture from my perspective, but it really is a fairly recent thing, only about 500 years old, that we think in those categories. But the West itself, and really the great civilizations of society, were rooted in the idea of finding what was universally true. Paul says it best. I don't think there's any question about that. But the Greeks, those Greek philosophers got to it about 600 years before he did. So Paul is drawing, obviously, what he says is the word of God, but he's also playing into and drawing upon an almost 600-year-old tradition at that point.
With that said, the church, obviously, both Catholic and Protestant, has a role to play in society. And we had mentioned Martin Luther King in that famous letter from a Birmingham jail. He talks about the days when the church was not merely a thermometer that was recording the ideas and the principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that formed the mores of society. I can't think of a better way of putting it than that. But to what degree can the church begin again with this clear message that is contrary to all notions of racialism, if only that, be that thermostat rather than the thermometer?
Yeah, I love the way you put that, Todd. That actually gave me chills hearing that from Martin Luther King. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, I wouldn't want to turn our churches into just bastions of social justice, even if it's right? I mean, it is correct, and we need to fight that racism. It obviously has to be bigger than that. But I think by focusing on the character of Christ, focusing on the way that he reached out to everybody, the fact that the Great Commission is to go two by two to all the peoples of the world. T.S. Eliot, who was a high church Anglican, has a great essay called On the Catholic Order. And by Catholic, he doesn't mean big C, he means small C. And he basically says, you know, if the Catholic Church is to live out, meaning the Christian Church, if it's to live out the Great Commission, it cannot have bigotries. It has to go forth, even if it goes to a place where there is going to demand sacrifice of the actual evangelists. That's what we do, and that's what's necessary. So, I mean, in my mind, the church just needs to keep being the church, and those truths are already there. I think they can be expressed in certain times, and they can be done so properly, but I doubt if anyone wants to go to church to have our pastor or our priest beat us over the head with some current message. At least I don't, but I would like the message that is timeless to be relevant to the present rather than the current message trying to take over, if that makes sense.
Dr. Bradley Berzer is Russell Amos Kirk Chair in American Studies and Professor of History at Hillsdale College. He's editor-at-large for The Imaginative Conservative and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Why It's Preposterous to Say Western Civilization is About Whiteness. You can read it and find out more about The Imaginative Conservative at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Berzer, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, Todd, it's always great talking to you. Thank you so much for having me on.
We will be going through listener email and the Issues Etc. listener comment line right after the break. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is the new Growing in Faith Bible. It's written for children, grandchildren, and godchildren, ages 8 through 10. The Growing in Faith Bible contains more than 100 Bible stories with beautiful, engaging pictures. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Growing in Faith Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.